The 100 Years' War, the De Guiscolin period. London erupts in the violence. Now, a meeting was held with prominent citizens who were called to organize the city's defenses against what appeared to be a systematic assault on its privileges by the government. They were addressed by two disaffected lay peers, Guy Bryant and Walter Fitzwalter. Both were experienced military men who had been prominent supporters of the parliamentary attack on the court in the previous year. Bryan was a well-regarded veteran of Edward III's early campaigns and a former knight of the royal household. Fitzwalter was an ambitious and disappointed cavalier who had been captured at the Battle of Voss in 1370 and had to mortgage his Cumberland estates to ruinous terms to Alice Piers to raise money for his ransom. He took the lead with an inflammatory speech against John of Gaunt. At the end of the meeting, the Londoners present grabbed their weapons that they lay at hand and went in search of their enemies. They broke down the doors of Henry Percy's house in Aldersgate and forcibly released a prisoner whom he had detained there. Then they went in search of Percy himself, rampaging through the bedrooms and piercing the beds with their lances. Thwarted by of their prey, they made their way through Cheapside toward John of Gaunt's Palace of Savoy, gathering the crowds about them as they went. They swarmed down Ludgate Hill, declaring their intention to seize the Duke. They reversed Gaunt's arms whenever they saw them. They beat up anyone who was wearing his badge. They battered to death a clerk who gave it as his opinion that de la Mare was a traitor who deserved all that he had gotten. The Duke was dining with Henry Percy at the house of a friend. They had not yet finished their oysters when the mob was heard approaching. The two men got up so fast that the Duke cracked his shins against the table. Running to the nearby quays at the Thames, they commandeered a boat and rowed themselves across the river to Kensington, where the Dowager Princess of Wales gave them sanctuary in the prince's manor. Only the personal intervention of the Bishop Courtenay saved the Savoy from being torched. How far the city government was behind these events is hard to judge. So large a crowd cannot be calmed even by pleas of the mayor. The alderman protested after the events. A riot, once it begun, rages like a whirlwind on one side then the other, provoked by mindless cries of different ringleaders, till eventually they inflict some terrible injury. Edward's ministers did not proceed with the plan to appoint a royal captain, perhaps because they were chastened by the rioters, or perhaps, as Thomas Walsingham said, because the king, at an interval of lucidity, forbid it. The city government was forced to dismiss the mayor and to earn the Duke's pardon by carrying a large wax candle impressed with his arms through the city streets to St. Paul's, where it would be kept ever lit. The common people of the city never accepted the submission of their leaders. Although summoned by the town crier to join the procession behind Gaunt's memorial candle, all but the city office holders stayed away. The mob remained as dangerous a threat as it ever had been. For some time, Gaunt and Percy were obliged to pass between their mansions and the Palace of Westminster through back streets accompanied by an escort carrying shields and drawn swords. Ultimately, the success of the Duke's policy of repressing dissent was measured by his ability to obtain grants of taxation. By that test, the results were very mixed. Speaking in Prince Richard's name, Gaunt had called at the outset of the Parliament for a larger subsidy than the Commons had ever voted in a single session. The government, he said, needed to raise 2/10 and 1/15 in a single year. But if they, the Commons, were reluctant to grant a subsidy in the traditional form, he invited them to consider alternative ways of raising the same money. A general purchase tax of 5%. A hearth tax of 1 groat, that's 4 pence per household, or a tax of £1 per knight's fee on holdings of land. It would be better, he say, to give voluntarily than to lose everything to the enemy. The Commons declined the grant, a double subsidy. They endured some difficult years, they said. They singled out in particular the heavy losses of ships to the enemy, almost certainly a reference to the fleet loss at the Bay of Bourgogneuf. In the event, after discussing the possibilities for a long time, the Commons chose a form of taxation which the government had not suggested. On about February the 22nd, they granted a poll tax of 4 pence per head on every man and woman in the country, which they appear to have believed was the equivalent of 1/10 and 1/15. There were to be no exemptions, apart from children under the age of 14, and honest beggars. Convocation, in spite of the ill feelings generated by recent events, or perhaps because of it, made its own grant 4 days later, a poll tax of 12 pence on each beneficed clergyman, inclusive of the 4 pence granted by the commons. The poll tax was condemned by the chronicler William Walsingham, that arch-conservative and acerbic anti-government man, as an unheard-of tax, which it was. Nevertheless, it had a number of attractions to those who devised it. It offered, like the parish tax of 1371, an escape from the outdated standard assessments of 1334, on which the 10ths and the 15ths had been based for the last 40 years. It substituted a broader tax base defined on the simplest possible principle. It had the advantage of being a regressive tax unrelated to income or assets, which bore lightly on the landowners and substantial on townspeople represented in the commons. It also bore very lightly on the church. Even at 3 times the rate payable by laymen, no doubt many men agreed with John Robinet that a young domestic servant in Nottingham, who protested as he was arrested for non-payment, that it was unjust and irrational for him to have to pay as much as a richer citizen ought to pay. Yet 4 pence was not an enormous sum, about a day's wage for a carpenter or 2/3 of a day's wage for an archer. Unfortunately, those people are paid very high labor salary. You're only going to find goldsmiths higher than that of an archer. The commons was well aware of the upward pressure on wages since the great epidemics, which had contributed to the declining profitability of land since the middle of the century. They must have believed, like their predecessors in 1371, that there was a large number of people who had fallen outside the tax net under the old system, but who could afford to pay. In prosperous years, this calculation would probably have been justified, but it proved to be a serious misjudgment in 1377. There would have to have been about 2,300,000 adults, lay taxpayers, to justify commons expectation. In fact, some 1,355,000 laymen were assessed for a total of £22,586, which was less than 2/3 of the value of a traditional subsidy. The discrepancy was due partly to the fact that the commons had overestimated the adult population in England, and partly, no doubt, to indulgent local assessors, a measure of evasion and fraud. The clerical poll tax brought in just £800 compared to the £15,000 which the clerical tenth traditionally yielded. These exceptionally poor receipts coincided with one of the worst periods for the customs receipts in recent memory. As a result, the English government faced a reopening of the war in 1377 with total revenues from taxation of less than £60,000, about half the average level for the period, which, of course, at the same time, the French have their treasuries bursting with money. So we'll see how this is going to go. It's going to be tough on England once again. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.